Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Finally here. Start of the NFL season. Thursday night football between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. Lots of silly talk about Tom Brady going undefeated. Can the Tampa Bay Buccaneers repeat? All that stuff. I get it. Although I don't think that's the most interesting aspect of the night tonight. The most interesting aspect of the night is actually Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott has been dealing with injuries going all the way back to last year, and he's been handled tenderly by the Dallas Cowboys throughout the preseason, so that makes sense. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys are going to win tonight because Tampa's defense is very, very good, but I'll be curious to see if Dallas can do anything to at least make it interesting. You know, first game out of the gate, maybe a little rustiness. I don't know, but I don't expect Dallas to surprise anybody tonight. So I just ask for entertainment. That's all I ask for tonight.
I was going to say, isn't that usually when you get it, when you don't expect it?
I guess.
I mean, there was like an 8-year run in this game specifically where the Super Bowl champion opened up the next season where they won.
Mm-hmm.
You were probably in a survivor pool at some point, and this was my go-to game.
I used
take
to be
the champ in the opener.
I used to be in a survivor pool, and I always would identify the team that I would just go ahead and pick against every single time. That was always my strategy. And like this year, it would be the Houston Texans. I'll pick every game against the Houston Texans.
You think
except,
they'll win?
Except for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm like, wait, what? I don't even know. But yeah, the NFL season starts up tonight, and I do think it's important to note that there are a couple changes going into the start of this season. The biggest one being that you're going to be watching a lot of these Thursday night games through streaming this year. You're going to be watching a lot of these games on Amazon. Get used to it because in 2022, next season, they all go streaming.
Away from the NFL network? Like tonight's a regular broadcast, right?
Tonight's a regular broadcasting, but all those NFL network games are all going streaming next
eventually
year.
Eventually going to be streaming.
So
no, not eventually. Next year.
Next year.
Okay.
But I think 11 of them are on streaming this year. So get used to watching them on Amazon because they're going to be headed that way.
You're saying this to the old
people. To the old people.
Not people
not,
who normally consume their sports on their
not
phone.
Not me. Not necessarily you. Not necessarily Rand. But for the older people.
Rand's old.
As I've seen jokes when Amazon got the package, there's a recurring joke of what channel is Amazon on.
Right.
Like that sort of stuff. There's also, we have to keep reminding ourselves, 17 games to be played this season.
Extra week.
And then there's two, there's off the field, and then there's on the field that's going to be interesting as well. On the field, we know about the taunting penalties. That they are going
to be. There seems to be an overreaction to that in the first week of the preseason.
Yeah, and like most things in the preseason, they tend to kind of go away after a little bit. I'll be curious to see if they actually stick with what the taunting penalties are. It's also important to note what they are really going out there to penalize. And it's more of like the in-your-face stuff than, say, touchdown celebrations. And I've made these jokes before. The reason why the touchdown celebrations and the interception celebrations are never going away is because they're now sponsored.
It's going to be interesting in the NFL this year in this sense. I thought on the officiating front, I thought last year there were no fans. The NFL was hyper aware that this was now a television product.
Yes.
And no one was tuning in to see the officials.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the data on penalties per game from last year because it had to be a mauling last year in order for it to be a penalty. Like, did they call a holding penalty at all last year?
It's funny you bring that up. Holding is actually one of the things that might see a reemphasis. To your point.
Right.
To your point. Last year, nobody there, pure television product. Nobody. People want to see scoring.
Yeah.
So holding penalties per game dropped by like 2 holds a game. That's significant, okay?
2 called holds per game.
Yeah, 2 called holds per game.
Yeah. There's that, one on every play.
You could call holding on every play. Yeah, if we're going to break out the cliches, that's definitely one of them. But I believe
it's the
number.
It's opening night. If cliches are not for opening night, then for when?
I think it was Football Outsiders when I was reading the almanac the other day. They had something along the lines of, I don't have the almanac in front of me. I think it's like somewhere in the other studio. Regardless, it was like.
I need Rand to clip that.
What?
You're just, look, you are the younger of the two of us, and you are more youth-minded than I am for sure. But yes. You literally just said on during this live podcast, I was reading the almanac the other day.
The Football Outsiders almanac. You're familiar with Football Outsiders,
not like
right?
Farmer John's or Poor Ted's. You're trying to get a weather forecast for tonight's game
last year when they
announced the schedule. You and Gold were looking
at your farmer's
almanac.
So there's a website, an analytics website called Football Outsiders. I think by now most people are familiar with this website, maybe. It's kind of like a pro football focus. They've been around for a long time. And I enjoy their work.
Okay.
So every year they put out kind of like the Athlon College Preview magazine. They call it the Football Outsiders Almanac. It's a twofold thing. One, it provides a pretty detailed analytical look at every team going into the season. And then the second part is it's a fantasy football Bible.
Yeah.
So, like, for
there's a whole
draft.
Generation of people though who like have no idea what
an almanac is.
What an almanac would be colloquially referred to as.
Well, when I was reading the almanac the other day,
he was getting his.
I was looking at
tide
the,
charts.
I was looking at the rainfall totals of the last 20 years, and you know,
said Dak Prescott would lead the NFL in passing yardage.
You know, based on the acorn drop rate in my yard. I feel like, no, that's basically what the almanac would be. But anyway, back to the holds. I believe the number was they called two less holds per game last season in an emphasis to keep things going offensively.
Let's keep this thing moving. If there's a maiming, let's call it. If not, move it along.
Do they stick with that? Because
there's an ebb and flow in officiating.
Yeah, there is.
There is.
If they stick with that, then you know the talk about Tom Brady you know, throwing for 55 touchdowns is more plausible than not. If they go back to calling holding before, which is still pretty liberal, all things considered, because they've been so offensive-minded in the NFL for decades now, then maybe not so plausible. So there's a couple of different things to look ahead for this upcoming season. That's on the field. Off the field, I hope you all like gambling, because tonight it begins. Because the NFL has actually gone all in. Remember, I think it was 2017, Roger Goodell said that gambling and the NFL are just on the opposite ends of the spectrum. It's not something you're interested in.
We had Adam Silver embracing in the NBA, and then the other end of that was Roger Goodell, as if the popularity of the NFL isn't inextricably tied to gambling.
Yes.
Whether you want to call fantasy football gambling or not, it is.
I will.
It is.
It's also the easiest sport to understand,
yeah.
And it happens once a week. It's tailor-made for this kind of stuff, right? Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, famously said, no to gambling. Not something that they are interested in, despite all those connections that you laid out. Well, you're going to see upwards of 6 different gambling outlets advertised while you watch NFL games. So if you weren't familiar with gambling before, you're going to be familiar with gambling by the end of the season. Now, you know how I feel about this with gambling. I don't feel that gambling is as mainstream as we would like to think it is. I still think it's a very niche thing to do. I think it's something that a casual person, when it's legal in their state, will put a little bit of money down. But I don't think, I fear if you think that people got sick and tired of football analysts or football analysis based on fantasy stuff, it's going to be worse based on things like spread and everything else.
Well, I think that's where the extension goes.
Mm-hmm.
To your point, I don't think we'll ever have a majority of people who are interested in the game spread or maybe even the total. But honestly, I do think you can convince even a casual football fan who would tune in tonight, hey, I'm going to give you Rob Gronkowski's
catch reception total for this game at 2.5, you going over or under?
I'll go over.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That is basically a version of fantasy football.
See that.
But I think when people think of traditional gambling, they think of the point spread and the total. They don't really think of individual prop bets.
Yeah.
That's where those prop bets are going to change when gambling becomes legal in every state. And also, Joe, the live line is some kind of drug that you don't experience it if you never have.
Yeah, I know you have.
Stay away from
it. I know you and the live line have an interesting relationship.
Else.
But I want to make something abundantly clear. I'm not against gambling.
Right.
I'm not against gambling.
But you're like a normal sports fan who you're not like, I have to watch this game
with
money on the Patriots, the Brady's tonight -7.5.
I'm going to watch the game because I'm going to watch the game.
Right.
just as simple as that. Again, I am not against gambling at all. I'm also not an idiot. I understand that gambling is the next revenue generator or a way to make revenue. And that's really what it's about. The NFL has found a way to maximize their revenue in every possible way. They know exactly how to extract money from you at the games. They know how to extract money out of the television networks because it is the last true live product that you can bank on. And if you're a broadcast network who continues to lose viewers, you know you're going to get 20-some-odd million people to tune into your network on a Sunday. So they've squeezed every possible bit of money they can out of all the existing relationships, apparel, concessions, tickets, parking, TV, you name it. They've got it down. What else is left? Gambling. And that's where the next revenue stream is going to come from. And it's if you were sick of DraftKings and FanDuel ads, what was that, 5 years ago? Folks, be ready. Be ready. The other thing that'll be interesting, too, is whether or not the social justice messages that will be allowed by the NFL will have any sort of impact whatsoever in the think piece space. Because remember when the NBA was doing it, it was one big thing. Well, this is why nobody's watching the NBA. I have a feeling that NFL ratings are going to be through the roof, regardless of how you feel about social justice messages and everything else. So those are the kind of the scene setters for the start of the NFL season tonight between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. Lauren Brownlow, WRALSportsFan.com, joining us now on the Easter Automotive Group Hotline. Brownlow, what up?
Hey, I was going to say, like, I feel like you could have Ruff co-host that because I feel like he could be a really good therapist, even though that's not his line of work. Mm-hmm. Like you could talk to Ruff and McNeil about almost anything. He's one of the nicest people I've met, like in any walk of life.
So Sam Darnold met with the media, Panthers quarterback, and they're taking on the Jets Sunday, which you can listen to on The Fan, 1 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starts at noon here on 99.9 The Fan. And you would think there's some sort of revenge factor at play here, right? I mean, this is the team that dealt him. He wasn't good with the Jets. Adam Gase wasn't a good coach. So when he was asked about whether or not this isn't just some other game, this was his response.
But it is. No, honestly, I mean, we're all excited in the locker room to just play football, you know, play in front of a crowd, especially here in Charlotte. Just to have the fans back, first of all, I think that's amazing, and we've all been looking forward to it for a really long time. I'm excited to play the Jets and, you know, see what this football team can do. You know, I'm excited to just play consistent and, you know, play within myself.
That was Sam Darnold. And then he was asked about if he had any regrets from his time with the Jets, and this was his response.
I mean, I don't know if I have any regrets. I mean, you know, obviously things didn't go our way. You know, wish we would have won more games. I think that's pretty obvious. But, I met a lot of great people there in New York. Have a lot of great friends that are still with the organization. So, I don't regret anything.
Well, I really wanted him to go full Dennis Clifford there and say, the pregame meals were great.
Oh,
I'm going to remember my teammates forever.
With tears in his eyes. Yeah, that was his favorite part, was the pregame meals in New York, which fair. You know,
yes,
that'd probably
absolutely
be pretty. I'm sorry. I think I nodded off somewhere during those answers. Why are quarterbacks like this? Like, why?
Russell Wilson's like, respect, man. Respect.
I mean,
like, I thought I gave no answers. Man, Sam, like,
who
tip of the cap to you.
This? who started this? Like, give me a, you know, a Joe Namath making guarantees. Like, Baker Mayfield says a lot of crazy stuff sometimes, but at least he says interesting things. Like, why are quarterbacks like this? I can't stand it. Who wrote the memo that they all have to be like this? Can we undo it? Like, I'm so tired of it. It would take nothing for him to just admit, like, hey, yeah, I played there. They drafted me. Like, yeah, it's going to be a little probably extra emotional, but, you know, at the end of the day, blah, blah, blah. Like, why is it so hard for him to be like, no, it's just another game? Like,
because, Lauren, Matt Rhule is about football and football only. And I bet you when he traded for Sam Darnold, he made sure all of those answers would and all of his persona would be about football and football only and not bleep word Friday.
Well, and that's why the Panthers are boring now. So, you know, it is what like facts, right? Like, I'm sorry. You know,
is it going to be boring when they're out there winning games, Lauren?
I just want them to fulfill the 8-9 prophecy. That's all I care.
That's probably what's going to happen. That's probably what's going to happen with them.
Or 9-8. Yeah. I'll take either.
Either one. Whatever the middle, like the middle, what would have been 8-8.
Yeah.
We'll take that. A 9-8 or 8-9. I mean, because of the 17 game schedule.
With 10-7, not you wouldn't even take that because that's not close enough, right?
No, I would be disappointed at 10-7. Yeah.
If it was 10,
no, I get that.
If it was 10-7, you're looking at the.
That's a successful year.
It's not just a successful year, but it's one of those, oh man, imagine if you had some of these back.
Yeah, you start like, to get into some of that.
You get it. They lost by.
Well, we got that last year. It was only two games by more than double digits. Yep.
No, you get a lot more of that. You would get a lot more of that if they went 10-7. Speaking of Cam Newton, yesterday he went on Instagram and he put this video about what the future holds for him after the New England Patriots decided to waive him and usher in the Mac Jones era. So here's Cam Newton on Instagram teasing some sort of announcement for tomorrow. Maybe.
He's got to make sure the 7-second delay is in place.
What happened to Cam?
We lost Cam.
Oh, man.
Hang on. I'll find him in a second.
We lost Cam?
Yeah, my bad.
He says he's not retiring, Lauren.
Funky Friday was the part that I was tripped up on.
Yeah. He says so here's Cam Newton.
On this week's Funky Friday, I have a lot of things that I need to get off my chest. This is not a retirement speech, and I have a lot of football still in me.
Okay, so he has a lot of things to get off his chest. Well, what can you possibly say? What is there possibly to say at this point after you got released by the Patriots?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm a little surprised he didn't try to say something about, like, who knows with Cam. You know how Cam is. Like, who knows what motivates him from moment to moment. I mean, I don't think – it doesn't seem like he's going to get picked up anytime soon. Maybe if somebody gets hurt, you know, teams will probably look his way. But
yeah, maybe. Plus, his vaccination status is also going to affect things because if you're going to come into the facility, there's a waiting period. Like, the whole 5 days away from the team quarantine – that got the ball rolling, I think, in New England. I mean, it's the same thing applying now for him to join a team in the middle of a season.
Yeah, and it's going to, you know, I can't – no, none of us can make the decision for him, right? And, and, you know, I hope he's right, and I hope somebody is able to pick him up. But, you know, if he gets vaccinated, it'll probably make that way more likely than if he doesn't. So that's his decision.
Before we move on to college football, one of our listeners had pointed out, not 9-8, not 8-9, but 8-8-1.
Oh, I was head not on a swivel.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be perfect.
8-8-1 would be perfect. We appreciate that. That's a complete whiff on our part because it was sitting right there.
It's like the ultimate 500.
It really would be amazing if they ended up doing that, but we shall see. The ACC had a terrible opening weekend of the college football season, and now a weary fan base across the Atlantic Coast Conference, across the footprint, looks to NC State, Lauren.
Oh, boy.
They look to NC State to see if the Wolfpack can take care of business on the road at Mississippi State. It's weird. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about NC State because for several reasons. The ACC's no good, terrible weekend was a huge factor. North Carolina losing to Virginia Tech has occupied most of our time, and beating South Florida isn't exactly something that gets you really fired up. But if there is something to be said about last Thursday when they opened up the season at Carter-Finley Stadium against the Bulls, they didn't play with their food, and I guess you do get credit for that.
I mean, you do for me. Yeah. I mean, absolutely you do, because they just looked really prepared. They came out and just took care of business from opening kickoff. There was no, we saw last year with them too, that sometimes there were some untimely penalties or some sloppiness or whatever. And there was none of that in this game. Like, there was just none of that. And they did what they had to do. Is South Florida terrible? It would appear that way. Yeah. It's pretty bad. I thought maybe some of those transfers might help. Doesn't appear so yet. So yeah, not so great. But yeah, I mean, you do get credit for that in my book. I mean, look what happened to Georgia Tech last week. You know, that was a team that got Coastal Division championship votes. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Or one vote?
No, you're right. People were on Georgia Tech this year. They were mad at me when I picked them to go 2-6 in the league. And I'm like, guys, I had to do like some serious mental gymnastics just to get them to the two wins. They had the hardest schedule in the country.
Yeah. No, literally they do.
Yes.
So I don't know why anyone was on that bandwagon. Like, it was crazy. And then they go out and lose that game. It's bad. I will say this, though, for the rest of the ACC. Like, if you saw, I think ESPN released its numbers over the weekend, and like the top most viewed games were both ACC games. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, based on expansion and the way that that went, I mean, wouldn't that be a success for the ACC? It doesn't really matter if they lost. Yeah. Am I doing that right?
Eyeballs are watching. Also, if you notice, Notre Dame continues to get really great ratings when they take on ACC name teams. Now, last year's NBC game at Notre Dame with Clemson was like their highest rated game in however many years it was. The reason for that is because people wanted to see this college football playoff type game. And then on Sunday with Florida State, I mean, it was a good game. Right down to the wire, obviously, going to overtime. But there is something to be said that if Florida State looks like, you know, they're coming out of the coffin like the Undertaker, well, then people are going to watch
and,
that. It matters.
And the other brand.
It matters.
Virginia Tech.
That's right.
Yes,
right?
Like, exactly. That's
I know they beat Carolina, but,
but that matters.
Why don't they get credit for that?
That matters.
I was going to say, like, I also saw another tweet from ESPN saying, I think it was like one of their most viewed tweets ever was that Inner Sandman video. You know, from before the Virginia Tech came out. Like, I'm sorry, I understand what people are saying about on-field results. But at the same time, like, considering the fact that everyone had been dunking on Texas for years, and now all of a sudden it's like, well, the brand of Texas is important. Of course it is, and we all understand that. So, like, why does it even matter what the ACC does on the field as long as their brands are, you know, keeping eyeballs on them? I don't even see why it matters anymore.
Lauren Brownlow, WRALSportsFan.com. You got the GIF previews out?
They'll be out tomorrow.
All right. Check those out on WRALSportsFan.com. All right, we'll see you next Tuesday.
All right.
First up, and hey, Joe from Prison Mike. Joe, about
what's up,
the,
Prison Mike?
About the Dementors, Joe. No, I'm just kidding. Come on, Office fans will get that one. Hey, Joe, how does this sound? Two local radio hosts criticized Derek Jeter's famous flip play, suggesting it's overrated and stating Jeter was out of position on the play. Ratings plummet.
Now, did we forget that Jillio said that Jeter was like a Jedi in that situation?
Yeah, we didn't.
This is what
did
happens.
Did we say it was overrated? That play itself?
I might have said it was overrated.
We said he was out of position.
Yeah, but he's got the Jedi sense.
Okay,
he knew
where
to be. He knew where to be. Right. So we said all that stuff. Okay. Let's reset. Let's reset. Yesterday,
speaking of playing the hits, Joe Ovius talks about it. Is Derek Jeter overrated?
Derek Jeter
coming up next. Colin Kaepernick on kneeling. Colin Kaepernick versus Tim Tebow. Which one is better?
No,
kneeling?
I think this is important. I think this is important because Derek Jeter goes into the Hall of Fame yesterday.
Yes.
All right. It was delayed because of the pandemic. Everything else, right? So he goes in the Hall of Fame yesterday. But this was part of his speech. His speech was funny because he should have been a unanimous first ballot Hall of Famer. I want to say this again. Are you listening? Get near the radio. Turn up your radio if you're having a hard time hearing me right now.
Derek Jeter is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Got it? And I'm glad that Jeter called out the one dope who didn't vote him in the Hall of Fame.
Thank you to the baseball writers, all but one of you. Voted for me.
Yeah, there we go. Good. I like that. But two things can be true at once. You can be a first ballot Hall of Famer for everything that you've done in the game of baseball and be overrated at the same time. And the simplest way I can put this is that Derek Jeter is overrated because he is a Yankee. All right? If Derek Jeter put up the same career, won the same amount of World Series, but he did it with another organization, he would not be the Saint that he is today in the way we view him in baseball. And there's a reason for that. When was the last time the Yankees won a World Series before all that homegrown talent, which we tend to forget, like, that wasn't, like, a really good freaking baseball team in the late 90s and the early 2000s? When was the last time the Yankees won the World Series?
Either 77 or 78.
1978 was the last time they won a World Series. My grandfather was a big Yankees fan. And during that time frame, there was the whole Steinbrenner stuff, the wallowing through, you know, media. I'm like, how many times did Billy Martin get fired and rehired during this time? I mean, the Yankees were a bit of a joke for a while. Growing up, as I was born in 1979. So through the 80s and the good portion of the early 90s, the Yankees were a bit of a punchline for Steinbrenner, for Billy Martin getting fired and all that stuff, right? So let's not forget where the Yankees were for a while. So here comes this homegrown, good-looking dude, along with another very impressive core group of Yankees, and they win a bunch of World Series. So right off the bat, he's going to be elevated like no other Yankee in that time frame. So that's where the overrated starts. But what do baseball people love? What do baseball people love?
Numbers.
Okay, so let's get into the numbers, shall we? How many times did Derek Jeter lead the American League in any sort of production category?
Yeah, he probably led the league in hits at some point.
Three times. Three. He led the American League in hits in 1999 and 2012. The other time he led a category was runs in 1998. How many times did Derek Jeter lead the Yankees in any of these major production categories? The Yankees during his tenure. He's the greatest Yankee, right? So how many times did he lead these things?
Which categories?
Any major production category. Talking dump home runs,
probably
stolen bases.
Batting average twice. Three times.
No, seven times. He led the Yankees in batting average seven times. He never led them in RBI. He never led them in OPS. I think he led them in OPS once or twice. Stolen bases four times. In grand total, I believe it was under 20 times that in his career he led in any sort of particular category. Let's not even talk about MVP awards. That's fine. A lot of people could be Hall of Famer.
He was robbed of one.
2006 when he was robbed. Totally get that. All right. Who doesn't love wins above replacement? Don't baseball people love war? What is it good for? They love wins above replacement. You know what Derek Jeter's career wins above replacement is?
I do not.
It's like 72. If you look at his time with the Yankees, basically the war per season, Alex Rodriguez had higher numbers. And we don't like Alex Rodriguez. But his war is 72. There's a lot of players above him in terms of wins above replacement. Do you know what his defensive war is?
Lower than 72.
Try negative. He was bad defensively. I'm over-exaggerating here. He was an okay shortstop. But because he had such a command of the Yankees organization and he was so beloved, the Yankees were willing to put a worse shortstop in that position than the one they acquired, who they put at third base, Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez was a better shortstop than Derek Jeter when he got there. And the Yankees opted to have a guy who would miss 25% more of the balls hit to him. All right? Think about that. So, his final year was a joke, too, with the Yankees.
Why?
Because he insisted on staying at number two in the lineup throughout the entire time, while he was terrible. This really is the true sign of a captain, isn't it? Let's put the farewell tour ahead of actually making the playoffs. How many Yankees actually, like, asked themselves out of the lineup? The great Yankees have done that before, right? Derek Jeter never did any of that stuff. So, all I'm saying is, let's not act like there isn't a legitimate argument related to Derek Jeter's position in baseball when you look at straight numbers. And if I have to do this, the guy who's not the baseball nerd, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? It tells you that the people who pretend, or not pretend, the people who are very much baseball people will absolutely put aside what they typically will do when they want to coldly, objectively look at players. They'll put that to the side when they like the guy. And Derek Jeter goes a long way with his Yankeedom and the belief in a steroid era, he was the clean one. Now, I'm not accusing Derek Jeter of using steroids. I'm simply saying we have decided, despite the fact that we've had all sorts of instances where we've had our innocence ripped from us, from these players that we like, that Derek Jeter was the clean one. I mean, look at A-Rod. Of course, I do laugh that A-Rod has a much better Q rating post-career than Derek Jeter. You know what Derek Jeter's greatest strength was? It wasn't any of these numbers that I put up. None of this stuff. You know what his greatest strength was?
It's playing the postseason.
No. We didn't know jack squat about him. The greatest trick that Derek Jeter ever pulled was being nice with the New York tabloid media. What was the worst thing we ever heard from Derek Jeter?
The gift baskets.
The gift baskets. And that's really all that bad. He was considerate. He's like, hey, thanks for the fun night. Here's a gift basket. Here's an autographed baseball. That's considerate. So Derek Jeter's greatest trick, man, was he didn't give us anything. So we assigned whatever we wanted to assign to him. He didn't give me a gift basket.
Not yet.
There's still, well, he's not going to get one from me because I'll just rip him on the Marlins now.
I think we found Ovius's trigger. This is good. We'll just talk, bring up Derek Jeter.
You made me pull the Evernote tab.
I did. Except however many players there have been in Major League Baseball history, only five have more hits than he does.
Only five have more hits than he does. Over 12,000 plate appearances. I believe there's only 20 players who have more than 12,000 plate appearances in their career. You know who struck out the most? Derek Jeter. Next up.
The worst thing about prison was the Dementors. They were flying all over the place.
Thanks for that question, prison Mike. From Eric on Twitter. Hey, Joe, am I the bad guy? This is my, trigger here. Am I the bad guy? I've been in a 10-team fantasy football league for the last 9 years. The commish, 9 hours prior to tonight's draft, without votes or notice, made quarterbacks eligible for a flex spot. Isn't that Bush League? Two quarterback leagues suck. What should I do?
I didn't realize there were two quarterback leagues.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Can't change to a two quarterback league.
Hours before without a vote? Are you kidding?
No, that's. I don't know what to do if it's your only league, though, and you've been in it for 9 years. Yeah. I feel for that. I guess you try to power through it, but how did you get to the point where your friend, I'm gonna assume here, pulls this power play and tries to get you into turn your normal, perfectly acceptable league into this nonsense?
I want to know what other people said. I want to know what the rest of the league said, because I'm several fantasy team league guy, and none of my commissions would do this. Like, we had to have a vote.
I mean, you're still going to be in this league, right?
As I'm saying, if it's your only league and you've been in it for 9 years with your friends.
With your friends, you're still going to do it.
You're probably still going to do it.
It stinks, but you're still going
to
do it.
Then you just win it to spite them.
Yeah, that would be fun. All right, next up.
From Wolfpack Rob. Hey, Joe, do fans have to take it hashtag one game at a time, or is that just for the players? Are we doomed if we don't?
That's just for the players. Fans, if fans want to look ahead, if fans want to look at the big picture, let fans be fans, man. That's half the fun. You want to get yourself all hyped up about, oh, man, if we win this game, and if we win this game too, that's just conversation.
You mean like Dan Orlovsky yesterday with
the
Buccaneers potentially going 17-0?
When you look at their schedule, if they get past this game, I mean, there's a very good chance they can go 17-0. I mean, they're not going to, but sure, if that's what you want to think, that's what you're going to think. Nah, fans be fans, man. If you want to look ahead and think pie in the sky, by all means, or if you want to think existential dread, you can do that too, which means that when your team does win, it makes it even sweeter. Next up.
Next up from Icky on Twitter. Hey, Joe, the giraffe named after Joe Burrow died of an illness. Is that a bad omen for Cincinnati?
Excuse me? I didn't realize he had a giraffe named after him.
Yeah.
He does. It's,
or did.
It, well.
It's sad.
There's the Baton Rouge Zoo.
Yeah.
Had a 20-month-old giraffe named Burrow, B-U-R-R-E-A-U-X.
Because of LSU.
Because of LSU and Joe Burrow leading him to the national championship. He developed a sudden onset of symptoms Tuesday including a severe cough and overall agitation.
So is this a bad omen for Burrow in Cincinnati, or is it a bad omen for LSU?
I think we already know the answer for LSU.
Yeah, well, we know where that's at.
But I wonder if I'm a Bengals fan, and you probably believe in bad signs if you're a Bengals fan.
Probably. Yeah.
That would be my number one guess.
Is it too late? Is it too late to bring back Ryan Finley?
Probably, yes.
Okay. Next up.
This wouldn't happen if they would have just drafted Penei Sewell, but that's fine. Next up from Chris on Twitter. Hey, Joe, was Don't Fear the Reaper the best BOC song?
Was Don't Fear the Reaper the best Blue Oyster Cult song? It's their most famous one. But I'm a little partial to Burning for You. It's a nice power pop hit. I like that one.
Okay.
I believe Blue Oyster Cult also did Godzilla, right?
Did
they do Godzilla? Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna go Burning for You. All right, next up.
Okay, I like that choice.
No, Joe.
All right, last up, and hey, Joe, from Doug. Hey, Joe, top 4 at 4 songs featuring the cowbell.
Is this because of the NC State Mississippi State game on Saturday?
No.
People are obsessed with cowbells all of a sudden.
No, that can't be it.
Do people even get the Saturday Night Live cowbell references anymore?
God, I hope so.
If I went up to a 25-year-old and I said, I've got a fever, would they look at me and go, does that mean you have COVID? Or
yeah, yes.
Or would they look at me and go, and the only prescription is more cowbell? Like, would 25-year-olds get that?
Oh, God, I hope so.
Probably not.
No.
Probably not.
No? They're not being raised right.
If I said that to my 13-year-old, I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like you, cowbell this and that, he'd look at me and would say, and I quote, I just died from an overdose of cringe. That's what he would tell me. But you want to know my top 4 at 4 cowbell songs? Off the top of my head, we'll go.
I can't even name. Oh, Lover Boy. Everybody's Working for the Weekend.
Oh, yeah. Okay, number 4, we'll go with Beastie Boys' Hey Ladies. Serious cowboy on the cowbell on the break there. You got to go number 3, Low Rider by War. Starts off with the cowbell. Ding, 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 ding. All right. Honky Tonk Woman, Rolling Stones has cowbell. And then, of course, my all-time number 1, this is the easy one, would be Mississippi Queen by Mountain. Right? Is that by Mountain?
You can literally search on Google top 10 cowbell songs.
What?
Honky Tonk Woman.
Honky Tonk
is
Woman.
There.
All right.
You've got Born in the Bayou by CCR.
Oh, yeah.
Stone Free, Jimi Hendrix, yeah.
Okay.
Low Rider, War.
Is Queens of the Stone Age, Little Sister on there?
Ooh,
that's got cowbell in it.
But Honky Tonk Woman was number 1.
Number 1.
Mm-hmm.
What about Queen? What about Mississippi Queen?
I don't see it. No.
No Lover Boy?
Moby Dick, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, I can see that. I bet you Rapture's House of Jealous Lovers is not on that list. That's way too indie for...
I don't trust these people.
Why not?
We're an American Band is number 2. That's fine.
No, that's got cowbell on it.
Yeah, it does, but I just number 2's kind of high. I don't know.
Anyway, that's Hey Joe. Use the hashtag Hey Joe if you got some questions for us, including questions about cowbell and Derek Jeter.
We should change the hour yodel to a cowbell. just for the rest of this week.
No. Did I sound triggered by the Derek Jeter conversation?
Yes.
You're fired up.
Yeah, I mean,
a little PTSD. It's all right.
Look, like I said, the Derek Jeter conversation has come up enough times that in my old note-taking system, I had a tab specifically for the Jeter conversation. Like, I had talking points already, and I copied and pasted them over to my OneNote to have them again, just in case. We spent a good chunk of time this week talking about the ACC's no good, very bad, terrible opening week. And the ACC's lonely eyes turned to NC State for some vindication with a win at Mississippi State on Saturday. We'll see if that happens. I think State's, what, a 2.5-point favor right now?
They are.
Over the other Our State people? The other Adidas school Our State people? Anyway, Nick Saban, Alabama head coach, was part of the ACC's no good, terrible, very bad weekend. They crushed Miami. It's a game that most of us should have understood was going to happen for a variety of reasons. The biggest one being that Alabama just owns neutral site openers over ACC schools since Nick Saban has been there. The other is that Miami is simply just not at that level as Alabama. Miami is not a college football playoff contender. Miami is not coached by Nick Saban, who's really freaking good at his job. And Nick Saban's so good at his job that he can basically play the greatest hits, and we all go, another Nick Saban great rant! And here he is yesterday talking about his team.
Okay, I think several years ago, it was the sixth or seventh game of the year. We just beat Texas A&M, and people started talking about our team. And I had to bring everyone's attention to what I referred to as rat poison. All right, so now we basically played one half of one game. All right, we went ahead 27-0 in the game. And then it was basically 17-16 after that with two stops inside the five-yard line. And, you know, so we didn't maintain our intensity in the game. So we were affected by the scoreboard. So we haven't proven that we can play for 60 minutes. Then we come out on Monday and really not ready to practice, I guess because of respect we have for the opponent. I don't really know all that, or maybe it's what they read on social media or in the media or whatever after one half of a game this season. And you know, then it was hot yesterday, so you know, so we got every external factor in the world that is affecting our ability to maintain intensity and play the way we need to play and practice the way we need to practice to improve. We got the scoreboard affects us, who we're playing affects us, the heat affects us, the media and what you guys write every day affects us. So, you know, to me, we got to prove that we can play and maintain intensity for 60 minutes in a game, execute, do our job, play hard, finish games, finish plays, do things the way we're supposed to do it.
So good.
That is next level genius thinking.
Nick Saban, he should be in radio. Because what was one of the...
Forget radio. No, he should be, like, solving bigger problems with the economy
and the voting system.
Are you kidding?
It's shtick. It's shtick at this point. But he sells the shtick. That's what makes him impressive. And that's why I think he should do radio. What was one of the first things I told you last year when you decided, you know what, I'm done with this whole newspaper thing. I want to do sports talk radio. What was one of the first things I told you?
Be prepared to make the same point over and over and over.
Yep.
And talk about the same things over and over.
Oh, hey, did we talk about the ACC's terrible weekend on Tuesday when we came back from Labor Day? Yep. Did we do it again on Wednesday? Yep. We sort of kind of doing it today. A little bit different because we're bringing in other aspects of this. We're bringing Nick Saban to the fold. We're just finding a new angle on this, right? This is why Nick Saban would be awesome at sports talk radio, because the dude could just do the same shtick, and we go, oh, man, this is great. This is a great rant.
And he fudged the numbers in true sports talk radio fashion.
Like, well, because, you know, you're talking for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. You're going to screw something up. All the stuff comes off the top of your head.
Miami only scored 13 points in the game.
I know.
So I don't know how they got to 16.
I know.
He's adding points. He's got that Dean Smith assist on a made free throw.
It's radio. He's rolling. He's making good points. He's like Colin Cowherd. The only thing that was missing there was, like, you know, this reminds me a lot of Apple. That was the only thing that was missing.
It was 41-3 with 5 minutes left in the third quarter.
The only thing that was missing there from Nick Saban was, did he tell us who they're playing on Saturday?
No, I did not hear about the opponent.
Oh, okay. You know why we didn't hear anything about the opponent? Do you know who they're playing on Saturday?
This is one of their breaks on the schedule, isn't it?
They're playing Mercer.
Mercer. Well, it was a couple of years ago. It was the Citadel who ran an option play on them and scored a touchdown.
Which is exactly what Nick Saban needed. That's what he wanted.
Well, except Clemson ran the same option play on them in the national championship game.
Yeah.
And Saban was like, we weren't prepared for that. And I was like, that's what Clemson does.
Yeah. Well, that's what they used to
do. That's what they used to do.
That's what they used to do. They're having a little harder time doing that now. So look, you're playing Mercer, so it makes sense that the players are not necessarily going to be thinking about this game in the same way they would as a season opener against Miami on a neutral site that's on national television. Come on now. But that's what Nick Saban does. That's why he's great. He's really good at this. And he the fact that he knows his own hits, it's like going to a concert. He's like, last time I love Riley. Oh, man, great crowd in Raleigh. Remember, you guys were like this one. And he like, let me play Rat Poison for you. I mean, this is what he said back, what, 2017? I think it was when he did the Rat Poison.
I'm trying to get our players to listen to me instead of listening to you guys. You know, all that stuff you write about how good we are and all that stuff they hear on ESPN, it's like poison. You know what I mean? It's like taking poison, like rat poison. All right, so I'm asking them, are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys about how good you are? All right, just like your question right now, if we get stopped 3 out of 4 times, like that's a bad thing? We're not going to beat everybody 66-3.
And the best part about the Nick Saban dynamic is that the media in Alabama just rolls with it. Like, oh, man, Nick's calling us rat poison again. Cool.
I was going to say, could you imagine? Well, he was treated critically in Miami in those 2 years in the NFL.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Things are a little bit different in the NFL, as Urban Meyer is finding out in Jacksonville. So shout out to Nick Saban, man. The guy is...
He finds ways. I don't know how he does it.
I hope people understand. I am not being cynical. I am absolutely sincere when I say he's amazing because he can turn these greatest hits into fresh content. It was all over my timeline.
See, now,
yesterday.
Wait a second. You don't like Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Who gives you like a different intro to say Thunder Road.
Sure.
But you're okay with Nick Saban giving you the alternate intro. The old Garth Brooks hidden verse, right?
If Nick Saban ever then just all of a sudden goes, Sandy, then we're gone. I'm done.
If you get the Friends in Low Places verse, it's not on the release. Come on, man. You gotta be consistent, Joe.
What did my brother-in-law get into? I was like, oh yeah, yeah. This is the Grateful Dead song where they go from like this live track. It's like this is the famous one in 72 where they go from this song to this song. I was like, oh, okay, got it. And I bet you there are sports writers down in Alabama that are like, all right, so that's when Nick brought in the rat poison. They also recalled this one, kind of blended them together. Oh, man, he went for 6 minutes. It was awesome.
I just put Chuck Amato's Happy Thanksgiving in a podcast, man. I mean, sometimes you got to play the hits.
Play the hits. Nick Saban's like out poison. Here playing the hits, baby. Play the hits.
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, shout out to Hayes Permar for the idea on the Twitter sphere. Brady's entering his 34th year in the
NFL.
I'm
actually shocked that Hayes hasn't bum rush the studio to sing this song that he might have suggested.
He may have tried. I don't know. Maybe the weather kept him away.
Maybe.
I probably needed his help because it's pretty high and it's I'll just play it.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and you can run a QB sneak, will your mind still remember what down you are on?
Get it?
Will your status be week to week? Brady, I will be watching you till you're 70. And Brady, we're still shaking our heads at 28-3. And I'm thinking about how people keep thinking your retirement's near. Maybe it's all part of your plan. People keep on doubting you every single year, wanting you to quit and be a fan.
Here you go, Obi, it's your favorite part.
So tell me now.
Wait for it.
Take the books and
I couldn't hit it, man. I tried. I couldn't hit it. Not this morning.
Woo. Let's see if you can throw for 5,000 yards.
What?
Let's mess up Jaleel's car.
So high, man.
I'm thinking out loud. Ready? We'll find a wins wherever you are.
I probably could have done it, but it would have hurt. So I left the falsetto for you, Ovius.
No, it's good. I always enjoy when you leave.
I know you
too.
I know.
And maybe you should have called Hazen for that.
Yeah, his falsetto is strong.
You guys could he actually goes to harmonize.
That's true. I thought about doing like a lower key, but I just the key's so good. I don't want to do that.
No. I always when you have an opportunity to go high, go high.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.